It's all right. We can. I just edited that out.
Okay, I'm good.
All right, I'm good.
Did Aaron at there at your high school? Did they spank you?
No, fortunately not.
See, I consider it a good thing. Huh. Tammy Collier spanked me and made a bad boy out of me.
What, made you more rebellious?
Yeah, did you develop a psychosexual?
It made me a sexual deviant.
You're like, oh, a little bit more. Let me get a little bit more of that. Yeah.
Getting in trouble.
It's fine as hell, too.
Didn't they... I guess in the South, I guess it wouldn't have been a... Because when did they outlaw that? Didn't they rule that out like a while ago, or did that continue on up until like some fucked up shit like the 90s?
That's one of those things, like we were talking slavery last week, and it was like, that's one of those things that lasted longer than you think it did.
Yeah, like sodomy or something like that being illegal in like Louisiana till like 2006 or some shit.
Yeah.
Like last time LSU won a national championship, I guess sodomy had only been legal about a decade.
People were waving sodomy banners in the field, in the stands. Celebrating.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Me and Terrence were just talking. You got a permission slip that you sent home, and your parents could opt in to spanking that ass at school. My mom definitely took the option. I don't know. She was a big proponent of ass spanking.
So they could contract out any domestic punishment to the state, corporal punishment?
Yeah.
Like a class trip?
Well, I remember...
You had a permission slip?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember them doing that in elementary school, but I'm pretty sure they also did that at high school. And could you imagine being like... a principal, and you get hired in this like conservative ass town, and you're like ace political or maybe even slightly liberal, and all these parents want you to beat the shit out of their kids. You're like,
and this is high school, so these motherfuckers, like, what they hit, like 16?
Yeah, like, they're taller like, than you, twice as tall as you are.
You looking up at the motherfucker with the paddleboard or some shit,
yeah. Bend over.
Yeah,
oh, what you gonna do with that, little man?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Damn. Yep. Oh, damn. Oh, shit. Hey, hold on one second, fellas. I fucking cannot find my... Hold on.
Shit, hold on too, man. I'm hot. Hold on.
Damn, boys. Leaving mid-riff. Unbelievable. On my own again.
Oh,
no
shit.
One beside me, no one to guide me, on my own again.
That's the anthem, man. That's the anthem for me right now.
What's happening in your life?
Shit, man, ain't nothing much.
You've been abandoned by all your friends and peers.
That's right. Family.
Family.
Family in
forsaking
Africa.
You.
Forsaking me.
Oh, my God.
In Ethiopia.
This man's without a country.
Without a country, without a home.
What are y'all talking about?
Shit.
Talking about the World Cup?
Talking about the World Cup? Man.
Dude,
have y'all been watching that shit?
What about them damn Saudis beating the Argentines?
Is that the latest thing people upset about with the World Cup?
I think it's the equivalent of the three of us beating the 96 Bulls.
During the flu game or some shit?
Yeah, it's just not done. And it's one of those things where it's like you kind of wish you could be. It's like the Saudi national team is like one of only a handful of underdogs. You can't be happy for their triumph.
Right. One of my favorite all-time World Cup moments is the 94 World Cup. It was like Italy. Who were they playing? Brazil. It was Italy and Brazil in the final, and it went down to a penalty kick. It was tied, and they had to do penalty kicks. And Roberto Baggio gets up there. He is one of the greatest players of his day. And these are penalty kicks, right? Like, if you're a good enough player, it's pretty easy to make one. But it's also, maybe you can get the yips or something, you can get psyched out.
Also a good excuse to just cover your nuts up with the boys.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun. You know, they all stand in a line and cover their nuts up together. Real bonding act.
Right. I mean, I think you should be doing that anyways, everywhere you go.
Yeah, anytime you're with your boys.
Yeah. You never know when, yeah. You never know when someone's going to run. What if, you know that like trick they played in middle school where like they would hit you and someone would hit you in the nuts? Like, what if that carried over to adulthood and like your
where the hell are you from, pal? I'm always on guard when the fellas are around to this day.
Like waiting at the bus stop and baking some shit.
Bag tagging never went away in certain circles.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'm saying,
like, isn't that crazy if that carried into adulthood? I'm like, yeah, wild.
Yeah, wild, huh? That'd be crazy, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, society at large. Like, if you could be standing in line at the bank and the county magistrate walks by and just, you know.
Just kind of how you greet people. Yeah. Like, it was part of a greeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, World Cup final, 1994, and they're lined up, and Roberto Baggio comes up to shoot it in. And, like I said, a lot of the times, if you're, like, an expert player, the only way you're going to miss a PK is if, you know, you've got the yips, you get in your own head, or if it's just going to get blocked because the goalkeeper is good enough. Mm. But Baggio gets up there and he shanks it. It doesn't even go close. And the best part is the sports announcer, he just goes, "Baggio, no!
Baggio, no!"
Like he editorialized.
He editorialized, like, yeah. It's like, Baggio, no!
Yeah, oh my God, dude. That's, you know, in the other football, I guess the equivalent is missing a field goal. And one of sports' great delights is just when it's all on the shoulders of a kicker or whoever, and it's just one thing to win it all. And then it's just the agony of victory and the ecstasy of defeat,
right.
You know?
That's right.
Oh, shit.
Something I'll never know, because I was only in the sports, like...
Baggio, no.
Baggio,
no.
Baggio, no.
Was he Italian?
Yeah, he was an Italian sports announcer. Baggio, no.
Baggio, no. No.
What if he did the hand thing while he was saying it?
Baggio, no.
Baggio, no.
Oh boy.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I was only ever in the sports that like you individually competed, like
me too.
Swimming,
like track and
track. Yeah.
Yeah. And skateboarding, well, yeah, that's a sport.
Yeah, dude.
Extreme sport. Extreme.
Yeah, bro. That's a
sport.
Yeah,
bro. Yeah, dude.
I like when they tried to, I don't know if this happened in y'all small towns, but at one point in the mid 2000s, like the urban planners in my small town, like, gave up trying. Well, they didn't give up trying to fight drugs, but what they did is in part of their like multi.
They just let the drugs in. Yeah, they were like, open up the floodgates for the drugs.
Well, let's not fight it anymore, guys.
Well, we can't resist it anymore.
Let's all do drugs and Hobbs.
Actually, this was part of their multi-front offensive against drugs, but they opened a skate park because they were like, "What we'll do is we'll try to accept skateboarding into
isolate the drugs into the skate park.
Yeah, into a cultural norm, into the mainstream, and then that way it won't be a subculture anymore and people won't be tempted to use drugs at the skate park.
Yeah, because skateboarding was seen as like this subversive, rebellious things that kids would do, but I mean, we were smoking weed at the skate park. That probably made it worse.
Yeah,
because that's what we all meant to do drugs.
I don't know. Yeah, hanging out skateboarding as a kid, everybody was having risky sex at like 13 that was skateboarding too. So it's like, you know, skateboarders, bottom line, always going to be cool.
I was a poser. I like wore skateboarding shoes, but I didn't.
You wore skateboarding shoes?
I thought you were going to say you were a bladesman.
You're a BMX.
Terrence showed, everybody was skateboarding. Terrence showed up like moonwalking a pair of rollerblades. Like, yeah, just like doing real smooth moves, just
doing a dance routine.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, damn, man.
World.
You know, I actually can't rollerblade, man. like a skateboard, but I can't rollerblade.
Really?
Nah. Something about still being attached to my feet, man. It freaks me out.
Man, I want to tell you, the phrase putting somebody on skates, as in making them uncomfortable. You want to put me on skates, put me in a pair of actual skates. I don't know what it is. I was in college. I was invited to what's called a date party with this girl one time for her sorority. And it was like a roller skating thing. Mm. And I fronted all week like I could roller skate. Like it wasn't a big deal because I was like, how hard could it actually be? You know what I mean? Like I skateboarded a little bit.
It's just shoes and wheels on.
But it's different. But it's different.
We're talking about inline skates or like the four wheels?
No, like the four wheels. Like four wheels. Which
the four wheels? You couldn't do those?
Okay, so you all can, man.
Nah, I can't do that. I mean, I definitely can't do inline, but I could probably do those, though.
Oh, well,
it's just
like four
skateboards on your feet, you know?
Yeah, it's not. It's not like skateboarding. Like skateboarding, I feel like you're somewhat in control of that, right?
Yeah.
Rollerblading was different. I didn't bother to get there and practice because I thought I was just going to lace them up and be ready to go up there and dazzle them.
Yeah, you just going to zoom out.
I remember being out there and I grabbed her arm and words you never want to hear a woman say to you, could you please let go of me?
You were grabbing on to like.
I was trying not to fall. I was grabbing onto her arm. Yeah. That was the most pathetic. I learned a lesson that day. Never play outside your depth. No. Play within yourself always.
It's like an interesting psychological thing at work there, Tom. It's like you feel trapped by the rollerblades, whereas you feel more free on a skateboard. It's because you're laced into those individual.
Exactly.
Blades.
I think so.
And the skateboard,
I think
you can kick it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, so I think you should look into yourself and
you should
and
figure that shit out.
You
Tom.
Should figure that out. There's some psychology at work there, son.
Yeah. In any case, yeah, it's.
I've been practicing mindfulness. I'm a fucking mindfulness, goddamn, like what's the word? Like greater than a monk. Like I'm the most
like
mindful.
An ascetic.
a guru.
Greater than a guru. Bitch, I'm like a mind.
A god? A demigod?
I'm God.
Yeah, like Hercules, motherfucker.
There's something I came here to tell you boys today. I created the sun and the earth.
My father is Zeus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
What's your mindfulness practice? And what's that got to do with me not being able to rollerblade?
Well, you have to live in the moment. And so if you are on rollerblades, you just have to accept that you're on rollerblades.
Live in a moment of possibly busting your ass.
Live in the moment of possibly busting your ass.
You're on skates, there's precarity, but you just have to keep.
That's right.
Pooping.
You accept life on life's terms.
That's a good metaphor for life, man. You know, one day we all fall.
It's probably
in front of everybody.
It's probably mostly bullshit. Like a lot of these sort of like mindfulness, like a lot of these therapeutic meditative practices, modalities, or whatever, they are pushed most heavily by Silicon Valley startups. Like,
yeah.
I was reading this, because like, there's like all kinds of apps. Like, I have several meditation apps on my phone, and like, they're probably harmless. You know what I mean? It's probably harmless, but there are some out there that are kind of like nefarious. Like, there's one called HeartSync. And,
HeartSync.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever run across this one in the wild, but it's made by this guy named Mikey Siegel, who is like an MIT guy, who he's like a Silicon Valley startup guy. And the whole premise of the app is to get to a point, like he has his own house. It's called like consciousness hacking, it's like cohabitate, but cohack space or something like that.
Okay, we where a bunch of hackers live and shit like that.
Well, it's not hacking computer, it's like consciousness hacking.
Okay, so it's a cult.
Oh. Yeah, it's basically a cult. It's and the whole thing of like the heart sync is like you sync up your breathing and thus your heart rate with millions of other people around the world, and this will have some emergent conscious raising.
So this is like supposedly like, you know, like menstrual cycles, like people with menstrual cycles, like living together, they sync up and cycle up and shit. But this is for mindfulness.
This is for mindfulness. Yeah.
This is for your mindfulness.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So these guys aren't stealing elections. They're stealing your bodily autonomy. And joining it with the greater collective.
The greater link.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that you come into contact with all this shit like in the recovery world? You know what I mean? From like substance. I mean, and it's like it's kind of fucked up because obviously like you're in a very vulnerable place when you're in recovery. Like you need help from others, but you're getting shit foisted upon you that is going to have some probably more nefarious origins or at least intentions. Maybe not all the time. I'm not like a blanket.
Yeah, I don't know. That stuff just kind of like seems insidious though, because it's like all vibes based. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like easy to like get in this mode and vibe and like do things and not even understand why you're doing them, especially if you're in a vulnerable spot. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But I mean, hey man, I could use some mindfulness. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm a transcendental meditation guy. I'm trying to tap into Hollywood.
You're trying to tap into the collective subconscious of Hollywood.
Of David Lynch.
What
are
they saying there in the collective subconscious of Hollywood? Have you been able to?
I've not got to that rung. I think you got to pay money to get to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you've still got, you're on free trial, TM.
The next stage is yogic flying, and then after that, I get to make films with David Lynch. So. Or at least get a job at his foundation.
Yogic flying, huh?
Yeah.
This guy, this is like a Wired article about this guy Mikey Siegel, and this is how you know you're in some really like pretty sus territory. The quote on this: I saw spiritual attainment and I thought that does not need to be religious, that can be scientific.
Oh man.
Oh, wow. Well, as with a lot of this, there's only about 3 feet of difference between some of this stuff and magic.
One
alchemy.
Exactly.
Dude, so. No, I saw a headline in the Washington Post just today. AI's new frontier, connecting grieving loved ones with the deceased. And it's like, that's just seance. You're just...
That's magic.
You're just magic.
Yeah, that is it's the exact same thing, just the technologies are updated.
Well, I mean, it's like the Philosopher's Stone type of shit, like transmutation, you know what I mean? Like, this idea, if you can just manipulate the elements of the world, then you can create, you know what I mean?
You're right.
That's what
it's alchemy.
That's what science is.
It's alchemy.
It's alchemy, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
The reason I found out about this Mikey Siegel guy is he's like a big disciple of Barbara Marx Hubbard. Do y'all know who she is?
Nah, is that L. Ron Hubbard's like niece or granddaughter or
no,
something?
She has the
Karl Marx's
she has the dubious like two guys on complete opposite ends of something. Marx
Dianetics and dialectics all in her.
Well, you know, Dianetics, I'm pretty sure, is a, what do they call that, like onomatopoeia or syllogism? What is it called when you mash two words up?
Portmanteau.
I think Dianetics is a portmanteau of
dialectics and cybernetics.
It's that's exactly what it is. Dialectics and cybernetics.
Oh, that shit sounds cool as fuck.
It sounds
right up my alley. Okay.
That's exactly. That's Aaron Thorpe's.
That's my entryway.
That's the kind of shit he dines out on.
3 weeks later.
Well, I have a cult just for you, Aaron. Perhaps you've heard of it. But not Barbara Marx Hubbard was like, she was one of the founders of like transhumanism, like futurism. She was actually the founder of the idea of futurism. And this is where it kind of gets really weird. She had a years long affair with Jonas Salk. You know who Jonas Salk was?
The penicillin guy?
Nah, who's that?
The polio vaccine guy.
Polio guy, yeah.
And Jonas Salk, and this, you really can understand why the vaccine people are the way they are, because Jonas Salk actually was a eugenicist, pretty much. Like, he was like, obsessed with population control. He had a book called Survival of the Wisest. It's like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, these guys were not good people. These were not good people.
So, wait, what was there? So, what would they... they had created a, what, her and this dude, they created, what, like a religion or some shit like that?
Well, Barbara Marx Hubbard is basically the person behind, like, the human potential movement and, like, the...
Oh, okay.
In the Esalen Institute and all that shit.
I wonder if this is where... I've been seeing a lot about this long-termism shit, and I do not know well enough to talk about it, but I'm wondering if that's connected to it. Like, you know what I mean? This idea of, like, I guess, being concerned with, like, future generations and, like... But not in a material sort of way. I mean, it's mostly just a bunch of rich people with these kind of hokey, like, alchemy metaphysical ideas about, like, transhumanism and futurism and shit like that, you know?
It's kind of the idea behind effective altruism.
Yeah.
Like, you're... Yeah. It is weird. It's like... It's the opposite of mindfulness. I'll say that much. When you're that obsessed with the future, you gotta live in the moment, man.
You gotta live in the moment, man.
It is all...
in the roller skates.
It's all incoherent, because all these people... They're in a world where they need to ensure greater profits down the road, and the way they do that is through tech. Mm. But they're using tech to push forward ideas that are profoundly, like, anti-technology. Because technology takes you out of the moment. It takes you, mm-hmm. at least social media and these systems of command and control do. Like, it's all fueled on dopamine, and, like, mm-hmm. like, there's that thing about sports gambling in the New York Times this week about how, like, all these universities are now getting... money for sports gambling.
For sports gambling?
It's
it's
fucking everywhere.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But
man.
It's at the same time, like, they all are also practitioners of that kind of, like, mindfulness, like, meditative approach to things. And so there's a tension there. There's a profound contradiction.
Because, well, like, they have this idea, which, I mean, I guess most people do. I mean, maybe not nowadays, but this idea that the future is going to be better, like, it just has to be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, because, like, just this idea of human continuity and longevity. But these people are suffering from futurelessness and anxiety about the future as much as anybody, you know? The only difference is that they have all the money and the resources to do some crazy hokey shit that's not gonna fucking work, whether it's, like, space colonization or, I don't know, like, blood transfusions or whatever the fuck Peter Thiel is doing, you know?
Yeah.
That's a generous way to put what he's doing.
Vampirism.
Speaking of which, I saw a clip going around Twitter. It was like, didn't Peter Thiel was like one of the original backers of the effective altruism movement?
Yeah, was he?
And like now they're trying to distance themselves from him because they're like, oh no, he kind of just spoke at our conference in 2014 and then just kind of went away or whatever.
Man, I feel like that dude has his, like peppers his money and resources into everything, man.
I feel like if his philosophy can be summed up in any, like, sort of succinct way, I would say it's almost the opposite. I mean, because effective altruism is psychopathic, but it's not intentionally psychopathic. It has diluted itself through ideology and through other means of...
And idealism and shit like that. And
into
utopianism.
Exactly. It's deluded itself into thinking that it is good for society. But Peter Thiel is almost the opposite. He's like...
He's a vampire.
He's like, how can I ensure as much evil and destruction over time?
Yeah.
Yo, if anything about the whole blood transfusions and shit are true, and like, it just... He's like a... I don't know, man. He's like a... I feel like all these tech guys are the most, like, representative of, like, capital in its vampiric state, the way Marx talked about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With all these industries, so, and that I guess that tracks with his, whatever the fuck he's doing with that blood shit. Yeah.
Before we get too far down the road, so do you mean to tell me, if Salk wasn't chasing cult pussy, we might not have as much vaccine skepticism?
I think that a lot of the current world...
it's like that ancient proverb. I mean, you'll be judged by the ass you chase. You know?
I think Jonas Salk is an embodiment of the very real issue of how every aspect of the architecture of the modern world, everything from, like, the medical regimes to the internet and communication and workplace control, all this, it's all tied together back into the kind of, like, mistiness of time. And that all of these guys were, you know, fixated on how to resolve many of the fundamental contradictions of post-war industrial capitalism. Basically, in other words, how to keep communism at bay and how to keep workers and bosses on some sort of like copacetic terms. And you get cybernetics out of that.
Transhumanism, and futurism.
Exactly. You get all these things.
Retrofuturism and
right,
shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Scientology.
Exactly. And I think that doesn't mean, like, I'm not a vaccine skeptic, right? It doesn't mean that all vaccines are designed to kill you because the guy who made them believed in population control. However,
it's not an insane thing to think.
If you follow him a little more closely, though.
Well, it's just, I think it's like, it's kind of like how the founder of Planned Parenthood was like a racist, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the application of the, I mean, I don't want to say idea, but whatever it is could have very, like, I mean, it's neutral, but it could have very harmful effects, like, if it had been carried out to the expectations of the individual, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, they are, like, I mean, what if, like, he was like, all right, we're going to use a virus to get rid of these people instead, or to not give these people a virus, you know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly right. I think the thing is that a lot of these people, because they were, you know, met with this fundamental problem of post-war society, of essentially keeping the American workforce under control and insulated from, you know, creeping communism or whatever,
yeah.
They were increasingly obsessed with how to manage workers and how to manage their ideologies and how they encountered the world.
Like it's some post-Fordism type of shit?
Exactly. And so out of that, you get something like transhumanism and the attempt to make human beings greater than what they are. I mean, it's just a continuation of the kind of like Nazi Übermensch thing, but under kind of like more rationalist.
Post-Fordist, post-World War II world where, I mean, it seems to start where like, well, how can we make workers work faster to like, well, how can you unlock the few flourishing potential of a human being? You know, it's like,
you know what I mean? Yeah, and the thing is that if you look at all the union victories of the 40s and 50s, they were like the steel workers, the mine workers, like it was in the boss's interests at that time to build up the healthcare industry, to make medicine widely available and widely effective, and that includes vaccines, because they wanted a healthy workforce and they wanted a steady one and they wanted access to that workforce that wasn't going to be under threat. Because this was a different time. But as those industries gradually started eroding and as the kind of like family unit, which was the kind of like heart of it, also started eroding, you get all of the grotesqueries and shit that you see now. Like, so under that kind of regime of capital accumulation, vaccines, you know, they made a lot of sense. You know, just things like vaccine, like the medical paradigm that all made sense. But like now, you can see how, in the eyes of reactionaries, this all becomes proof of a larger plot. And this also extends to like the anti-LGBT shit and like the, you know what I'm saying, like the gender.
Well, I mean, because I've said this before, man. I mean, it's not like a novel point necessarily I'm coming up with, but like, you know, they seem to have like it seems like conservatives have a better conception of the future than liberals do, or even the left, really, right? Like, I mean, even when like someone asks me what better world do you imagine, right? I mean, I kind of know, but I don't know really how to get there, right? But it seems like the right, they have these like prescriptions, and everything is wrapped up in continuity. So whether it's anti-abortion or whether it's the great replacement shit or whether it's gender norms and shit, is literally about for them like, oh, our way of life is collapsing. Not even just social norms, but like physically being able to reproduce, you know, and like inoculate those social norms. And it's terrifying, man.
Yeah, I'd say that's a big reason why gender is the pivot point around which the whole, like, right-wing psyche turns at this point, right? Like, have y'all read that? I don't know if Judith Butler canceled.
Is she canceled?
I think that
I don't know.
They go by they them now.
No, did Judith Butler fuck up? What did they do?
I don't know. I still like Judith Butler, but
I read Judith Butler in college, and I liked them.
Well, they had an essay in The Guardian last year called "Why Is the Idea of Gender Provoking Backlash the World Over?" And it's basically, I don't know, basically gets into, you know, how fascism is a inherently incoherent movement, and that's what gives it its power and its force. It's very incoherence. And so it's pulling in all of these, as you said earlier, like diagnoses about like eroding social norms and is exploding them outwards into this extremely like fraught and sort of like, you know, terroristic aims. It's how like when we talked about on the midterm episode, it's like, yeah, Dems won that. Not technically, but they kind of won it like metaphorically, figuratively.
Well, technically they didn't. Apparently they didn't even did it because the GOP has the House now, but right. That's another story.
Right, right. Well, they did better than people thought they were going to do.
They did
better.
They squeaked by, I guess.
And this, in the kind of diagnosis.
Goddamn moral victory.
It was a moral victory, right. And the takeaway was that like, maybe it's because the Republicans are kind of in retreat, or maybe they freaked people out because they're so weird and they whatever. But I don't know, man. It's just like you look at that shooting in Colorado, and I see that as I see that as proof that they're getting exactly what they want. Like like they may not be winning in elections, so to speak, but do they even care about that anymore? You know what I mean? Like, they've mostly got everything they want out of the electoral realm and judicial realm. Like, do they even care about it anymore? You know what I'm saying? It's
I don't know, man. Like, I know that in the school boards and shit, which they were trying to, like, you had all these candidates that were funded by Moms for Liberty and shit like that, all these anti-trans groups and shit. I mean, like, they might not have won, but they started the conversation, right? And they have, like, they've sparked like a battleground, you know what I'm saying? Like a battlefield on which communities and shit can contest and shit. So it's like, they might not have won, gotten power, but I mean, you also deputize people to do this shit, you know? I mean, we've talked about this before, but even if you don't have like the state running up in there, you deputize people to be vigilantes, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like you extra political, you know?
Well, yeah, we should do some deputization of our own, which is to say that if you've ever been in the company of like Matt Walsh or Chris Rufo or whatever, and you've left thinking, damn, that was a baby Hitler situation.
if
next time you find yourself in that situation, just know, I'm not saying you should, but just know that you could secure your place in the history books as a hero if you just do the right thing.
If you leave a room with either of those two or the libs of TikTok lady and they have their kneecaps still, You've not busted their fucking kneecaps out of their legs and used them like hockey pucks around a room. If you've not done that.
listen. Also, you know, like if you are a journalist who like has interviewed or talked to any of these people, especially the libs of TikTok lady, I'm not telling you to like go out there and you yourself leak her address, but maybe you have an obligation to do it, you know?
Well,
maybe you have an obligation to leak it somewhere to get it around.
The thing is it's obviously not fucking illegal to say any of this because they've been fucking doing it for years.
They do it. Yeah, so go ahead and kill Chris Rufo if you need to.
I mean, seriously. They say this shit weekly. And then after a shooting, they act like, oh, like it's, you know, it's leftist. What was that Matt Walsh thread?
Saying that the left is using this tragedy for political points or some shit like that.
It's so stomach churning.
I mean, the thing is, like, that makes it just so grotesque is like, you know, it's obvious like what they want to happen, right? Like they obviously want violence. They want people to be killed. But like the cowardice, right, to like back away from it and then continue to say that people are grooming, and as if like, oh, well, what did you expect was going to happen, you know? Like, they're very straight up about what they want to happen, but then they say, oh, but the grooming continues, then the violence will continue. It's like, dude, fuck you, man.
This is exactly what they did with, like, Tanya and them. They literally, yeah. like, published all their fucking info and then disseminate it out there to the craziest people on the fucking earth and then just say, oh, well, if something happens, you know, that's none of my business.
Exactly.
It's like, what the fuck? I mean, it's like, these are just random people in a small community somewhere. Like, you want them. To get, because like that's part of their fucking goal. It's not electoral. It's not winning elections.
No, yeah. It's getting people fucking killed. Dog.
It's literally getting people fucking killed.
It's terrorism, dude. I mean, and that's the thing about it too. Is like, yo, how the fuck is she? I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I know that the state like favors like that kind of shit, but it's just like, how is it? How is this person still anonymous? You know what I'm saying? Like the libs of TikTok lady. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How are these people like? She gets to say whatever the fuck she wants to do and not even just dox people, but I mean, have people be targeted and then continues to get to say this shit and nobody knows what she fucking looks like, yo. You know? I mean, come the fuck on, dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, they get to hide behind anonymity while exposing people. Like, average fucking normal fucking people, dog.
Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, I recommend reading that Judith Butler article. It's interesting. They write, like, the anti-gender movement is not a conservative position with a clear set of principles. No, as a fascist trend, it mobilizes a range of rhetorical strategies from across the political spectrum to maximize the fear of infiltration and destruction that comes from a diverse set of economic and social forces. It does not strive for consistency, for its incoherence is part of its power. And then they quote that Umberto Eco article on fascism.
Whoa.
I love Umberto Echoes.
You know, I know we're ratcheting shit up when we're bringing Echo. Taking it up a notch, baby.
Yeah. He writes, the fascist game can be played in many forms, for fascism is a collage, a beehive of contradiction. Indeed, this perfectly describes the anti-gender ideology today. I mean, it's kind of confusing because they use anti-gender as the kind of ideology that motivates most of these far right groups, even though I see what they're doing. It's like these people say they are for gender, right? Because that's all they ever fucking talk about. Like, they're chemically castrating children, blah, blah, blah. They're grooming children and all this. But by saying that, they literally deny the actual reality of gender, which is that it is a social and legal framework that is constantly under construction. It's not like an immutable form.
Which they want to have control over. And, yo, one thing that pisses me off, it makes no sense, really, I guess, pointing out, like, right-wing hypocrisies and contradictions. But this one is, like, glaring, dog. Like, these motherfuckers do not care about kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, their whole project is about saving children, but when it comes to, like, actual social services and education that take care of kids, they don't give a fuck. I mean, Matt Walsh allegedly is a fucking pedophile. No. A lot of these motherfuckers are fucking pedophiles. They don't give a fuck about kids, man.
Yeah. Sorry, you froze it for a second. Yeah, no, it's like, didn't he have a tweet or something about, like, breedable 14-year-old or something?
Yeah,
like
16-year-olds or some shit like that. It's fucking
No,
freak.
Dude, these people, they worship death in every form. They want to strip everything about humanity away from you. They want to be able to define it on their terms. These are fundamentally murderous, genocidal people.
The thing that makes me so angry about it all is that I'll never have a situation to, we got some nice dresses for you, to Rufo or Walsh or anything.
I know.
Like, I would just love to have them come to a holler where I could get three guys with no goddamn future to do unspeakable things to them before turning them back out to where that they don't even have genitals anymore, but just rather a smooth mound like a Ken doll.
Like a Ken doll, yeah.
Yeah, but since they're so obsessed with it, we'll just, you know.
You know what? Nah, man.
And that's no disrespect to anybody with a smooth mound. That's fine, too.
With a smooth, fleshy mound. Nah, but on some real talk, like, and this is the thing, man. It's like, yo, like, remember when, I mean, I know this guy's probably still around, right? But remember when Richard Spencer, remember when he got, like, the shit beat out of him? He got knocked the fuck out. Uh-huh. And he has not made public appearances. That's what I'm saying. That's the thing that pisses me off. It's like, dog, like, at the end of the day, like, these people not only hide behind anonymity and deputize people, but it's like, I don't know how else you deal with this shit besides just force or people just showing out. But if nobody knows who these motherfuckers are and they're hiding behind screens the way all this shit is, it's like the enemy is fucking everywhere, you know? And then when they do show up, when these Proud Boys show up to, like, you know, whether it's state legislatures or they just show up to, like, encounter protests and stuff, they have the fucking cops on their side, man. As we saw with the Colorado shooter, not only was his fucking, what is his grandfather, a GOP rep from San Diego?
Yeah.
But apparently he made a bomb threat to his fucking mom. And it got wiped and the cops didn't do shit about it, yeah. You know? So it's just like, I mean, at every fucking level, it's like you can't rely on the state. You just got to rely on your community, you know?
Another interesting thing is that if you read the New York Times, there's like a New York Times article about that going around. About how the person that stopped the shooter was like a vet, right? It was like It was a trans woman, I think, and a vet who, like, stopped.
A trans woman and a vet, yeah.
And the way that it kind of got, like, repacked, that was one of the wilder things about that. The way it kind of got, like, repackaged and formulated for, like, mass consumption was that, like, oh, a vet stopped this shooter, as if it wasn't.
A vet and a drag performer, and not, it was actually, because somebody on Twitter was like, actually, it was a trans performer, a trans woman, not a drag performer, to make it, I guess because in the media, when people hear that, they're like, oh, well, all trans people and drag queens are the same fucking thing, you know? Like, inflating the two, you know what I mean?
Right.
So even the way that was packaged, you know what I mean? It was transphobic and queerphobic as hell, man.
It was, yeah. But the way that the New York Times article, I will give it this part of it was true, was that it basically, what it was getting at, the kind of larger image that it was getting at, and I don't think this was intentional, I think, well, it was intentional, but not in the way that they thought it was. They were doing this for narrative dramatic effect. But what they were doing was showing that this vet left war and came back to a different kind of war. The war that they're describing is like, oh, a war where we don't have gun control. That's not the fucking war. And this kind of gets at, like, the liberal obsession with civil war. They don't understand that we already are at war. This is war. Mm. I mean, like, if you got fucking people doing this shit, it's fucking war. And it's just an interesting thing that, like, that they have been so obsessed with this kind of meme, this idea for so long now, especially since 2016, that, like, civil war is coming. They've not been able to really connect the dots that there is no civil war in the sense that there's going to be, like, a North versus South.
No, there's not going to be one grand finale showdown type of shit.
No, exactly.
Go ahead, Terrence.
I was just going to say, it's exactly right. It's just going to be a slow war of attrition where they conduct these terrorist attacks on, you know, people just in their day-to-day lives, just for who they are, just based on their very identity. Is an exterminationist policy, you know, it is an idea that goes back to, like, especially the 19th and 20th centuries, an exterminist ideology. Like, that's the war. It's going to be a slow war of attrition on our society for those aims and goals. And if you look at the fucking libs, I can't say that I have any fucking hope that they're going to be the ones that are going to stop it.
Oh, no, dog. These motherfuckers, yo, look at this shit, bro. Like, I mean, just the dichotomy. Well,
they're just happy not to get blown out. So
exactly.
At the polls. So that's tells you where they're at,
dog. I mean,
they ain't got the dog in them. Basically,
they don't have the dog in them.
They ain't got no dog in them.
They don't have They have no conception of conflict. I realized this when I was like, during school and shit like that, and just like working, especially in gentrified neighborhoods in Atlanta and shit like that, and just conflict resolution and workplaces and how they deal with this shit, yo, these libs, yo, they have just no conception of, like, actually conflict can be productive, like, things can actually work, like, if we have opposing views, as long as we find some kind of synthesis or resolution, and especially when it fucking comes to politics, if not just interpersonal, like, fucking the way they speak to people of different ideologies or whatever, who they see as different, when it's just, like, politics, it's like, yo, it's like a baby, like, fighting a bear, man. They have no conception of how to actually fucking deal with this. Because they also don't have any resources. They don't have their ear to the ground and haven't, like, amassed, like, anything outside of, like, the electoral establishment. They don't have workers on their side.
Yeah, they have millionaire donors. That's it.
Exactly! Where the fucking right has these paramilitary fucking groups, these brown shirts, that are ready to be deputized at a moment's notice, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And you see this what exactly what you're describing in who's the new Speaker of the House. Like fucking Hakeem Jeffries. You know?
My boy Hakeem Jeffries about to start dropping biggie lines.
Oh, I hate God. This motherfucker.
See one of those guys. We're,
of course, he's probably one of those guys.
Whistling so. Biggie lines on their way to the graves. It's fucking great.
Whistling juicy.
Yeah.
It was all a dream.
It was all a dream.
Yeah, it really was, but not in the sense that Hakeem meant it.
Nah, it's more the Adam Curtis way, like a decline sort of way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's nothing really more to say about that. I wanted to talk about it. I was going to save it for the end of the episode after we talked a little bit more about this article I wanted to read. But, like, it's, I don't know. It's, these people, they spend all day trying to dehumanize a group of people. And when people, you know, act on that for whatever reason, whether that guy was like activated literally or who, I don't really know. I mean, like his, like you said, his grandfather is a GOP like operative or representative. I think.
Oh yeah. He's a rep from San Diego.
Yeah,
apparently.
It's like, that's exactly what they want. They're going to spend all fucking day whining about it after the fact that like people are pinning this on them, but it should absolutely be pinned on them. And in fact, absolutely. I would even go so far as to say that, we should be dehumanizing them. These people are absolutely. Not human. They're not. They're, I mean, fascists absolutely. Are not human. They I mean, they're fundamentally not. You could like say like
they hate humanity.
They hate they're humanity. Inhuman. People who hate humanity are not human.
No. Also, too, man, I gotta say that like, you know, like the onus is also on like fucking outlets like liberal outlets like the New York Times and shit, who fucking once a week will come out with "we're just saying" type of article about gender, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's just like, these are the people that like have it trickle down and disseminate into the mainstream.
They've,
you know what I'm saying?
It.
Yeah, they naturalize the shit. So when this violence fucking happens, yo, it's the same thing that happens with like, you know, like a similar very thing that happens with like police shootings, right? Black people get shot by the cops. It's always like, oh, well, this violence is natural to these communities, right? They don't say it like that, but it's like, well, the same way when we fucking bomb countries and shit like that. We're like, well, I mean, this country fucking has a famine. I guess we bombed this country out for like a decade. Well, it just so happens that's the way it is.
Yep.
And it's the same thing when it comes to like violence against like LGBTQ plus people, man. It's just naturalized so much that like, I mean, what else can you imagine Biden doing but saying, wow, that was horrible?
No,
like, what the fuck is the state actually going to do? They're not going to do shit.
When you've got guys like Jesse Singel writing shit in The Atlantic, like, it's this shit, it fucking circulates in all these elite circles. Okay, so more in the line of what we opened up talking about, but there are a lot of through lines here. There are a lot of connections, because the reason I was looking into Mikey Siegel, Barbara Marx Hubbard, transhumanism.
The Heartlink guy? Is the Heartlink guy, whatever it is?
Yes, that the Heartlink. The Heartsink. Yeah.
Heartsink. It sounds like an evil corporation from a sci-fi dystopian novel or something, man.
The reason I was looking into that is because I read this article in the MIT Technology Review. Under their biotechnology section. Inside the billion-dollar meeting for the mega-rich who want to live forever, hope, hype, and self-experimentation collided at an exclusive conference for ultra-rich investors who want to extend their lives past 100. I went along for the ride. All right.
Mm.
Let's see. Let's start out here. Who wants to live forever? The immortal words of Freddie Mercury blast from the speakers as blue lights swivel around the room and a smoky mist floats up from the stage in front of me. If the audience is anything to go by, the answer to this question is the mega rich. I'd come to Gstaad. I don't know how to say that word.
Switzerland?
Yeah.
Gstaad.
How do you say it, Tom?
I think Gstaad.
Gstaad. A swanky ski town resort in the Swiss Alps to attend the first in-person longevity investors conference. This is the first of its kind. The first
longevity investors, man, yo, They could have made it sound, gave it like a metaphor, a euphemism, or some shit like that. Make it sound cool.
No.
The Lazarus Company.
The Methuselah group.
The Methuselah.
You know, goddamn, guys.
I guarantee you there's some startup called like Methuse or something like that. Like, and they sit all day.
Methuselah getting... with all the vowels taken out of it.
They sit all day taking some supplement. And they refer to it as like Thuzin. I've been Thuzin.
I'm Thuzin. Yeah. I'm Thuzin.
Thuzin.
Thuzin. Thuzin. Thuzin.
Adam Tooze is Thuzin.
I'm cruising for coos with Adam Tooze, and we off that Thuz.
Who's the guy that showed his, the New Yorker guy that showed his dick on the Zoom?
Jeffrey Toobin.
Toobin.
Toobin. Yeah.
I'm Thuzin with Toobin.
Thuzin with Toobin. Zoomin' with Toobin.
Yeah. There were 150 people at this meeting, and its organizers told me that 120 of them were investors with millions or even billions of dollars at their disposal, and at least $1 million ready to pump into a longevity project. The conference was unlike any academic meeting I've ever attended. The location was stunning. The food was exquisite. The champagne came with a backstory. I'd never before seen a scientist work up a sweat during a longevity workout before a presentation, nor conference attendees dropping to do push-ups in between sessions.
Okay.
Many attendees were taking bags of pills on a daily basis, all in the hope of extending their years of good health. As the hotel's...
the irony of, like, burdening their, like, taxing their liver and kidneys in pursuit of a long life. Yeah.
Exactly, with drugs that you don't even know a decade from now could give you cancer or some shit like that. And they're just popping these pills, like, 24/7.
Dude, we really,
so you have leukemia.
We've joked about it before, because, like, especially during that raw water thing, but you really could probably go to, like, an acid mine drainage site around here from, like, an old strip mine and, like, bottle selenium and be like, yeah, this is pure selenium straight from the source.
I'll say, guys, you don't know this, but this was the fountain of youth that DeSoto was after. It's just a fucking acid orange water fountain.
Sitting at a beautifully decorated dinner table and perusing my rejuvenation dinner menu. That's what it was called, the rejuvenation dinner. The main dish is a choice between local veal steak and a kind of mushroom pie. I'm made aware of a hubbub over at the neighboring table. As I stand to take a peek, I see a group of men huddled over what looks like a napkin. One of them has cut his hand and is squeezing out drops of blood.
Yeah!
He's probably doing some kind of test to estimate his biological age, says Martin Bjork Jensen, chief science officer at Gordian Biotech, who is sitting beside me. It's not typical dinner behavior, especially at a...
Wait, hold up. Is he doing this shit by eye? Like, is he pulling out, like, instruments and, like, you know what I'm saying, to, like, measure his blood? Or is he just looking at his blood? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I, you know, the thing is about this world, and this applies to Theranos just as much as it applies to, like, the AI tech where they're trying to help people convene with the dead.
Mm.
It's all trying to prove, and much of science has actually always been this. This is not just a recent thing. It is just trying to basically prove magical. You know what I mean?
Right, like, that is true.
Like, do souls exist? Are souls real? All right, let's find out.
It's less about getting at some, like, sort of atomic truths about the world, and more about, like, do ghosts exist? Do this, you know, like all the things we're enamored with in our childhood and beyond, even like, do those things exist?
Mm-hmm. I think too, a little bit too, it's like, it's not even just curious. I mean, it might with these people be hubris, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know, like trying to snatch like some Promethean fire, you know what I mean? And trying to get one up on nature and God, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you get some Jurassic Park shit, man. You got to be careful.
You're right. Dude, they're gonna fuck around, and we're not gonna get a Jurassic Park. For me, the most horrifying possibility is like a Philosopher's Park, where they've like, oh, we've revived Aristotle and Plato, and they're
you just have to sit there and listen to them. And they're like they're so out of date and slack. You know, we joked about being stupid. It's just like Aristotle's just a complete moron.
Just, you're at Philosopher's Park and you're in the Jeep and you see the cup of water rippling out like. And then you roll down your window and a Greek guy sticks his head in and says, did you know that monism is actually, there's a supreme arbiter of the world and that he creates the ripples in the water and it's the same thing as your soul.
And his breath is like absolute dog shit.
You got food in his beard and shit like that.
And hemlock.
Oh, shit.
Do that shit at the Garden of Real American Freaks, too. We just bring all them back.
Yeah, ask anyone in the field what they do to stay young, and you'll typically be given a fairly lengthy list that could include anything from cold water baths and high intensity exercise to prescription only drugs or a combination of supplements. Some are experimenting with inhaling low oxygen air. I was invited to try out one of these devices at the conference, which happened to be positioned in the middle of a room used for networking and drinks reception. It felt a bit strange walking, champagne glass in hand, around people lying face down with masks on their faces. Let's see. Conference co-organizer Tobias Reichmuth has his own list. Reichmuth co-founded Maximon, an organization that supports longevity biotech companies, with his friend and longtime collaborator Mark Bernegger in 2020. His company is investing $100 million Swiss francs.
You know, is that like $200 million or some shit?
It's around $106 million.
Oh, damn. I was way off.
Reichmuth has a personal goal of living to the age of 120. He's lost a lot of weight since 2016. Eating a largely plant-based diet, getting plenty of exercise.
Wait, I gotta say real quick, like, it's probably buried in the lead, baby, but, like, it's funny that he wants to live to 120. Meanwhile, there's, like, some lady in Japan that has been having the same diet for, like, the last, like, 110 years, and she will last longer than any of these motherfuckers, yo.
Yeah.
Like, smoking cigarettes and, you know, having, like, a glass of bourbon a day or something.
And eating chocolate, yeah. One bar of chocolate a day.
His daily regimen includes NMN, a supplement that is meant to increase levels of NAD+, which helps provide cells with energy.
NAD+, plus, okay.
NAD+, plus. That's right. Then he talks about supplements. All conference attendees were handed a gift bag with at least two containers of supplements. In mine, I found 60 days worth of purity supplements in a small tub of the resveratrol.
How is this not different than the Alex Jones shit, bro? Doesn't he do the same shit on his website?
Or James Baker, or Jim Baker.
Yeah, anybody these motherfuckers fit.
Then it talks to a doctor who has treated people who have become ill after taking longevity. They came to me almost in kidney failure in their 30s because they jumped on a very high dose of supplement.
Oh my god.
Dude, man, you go to the doctor, man, he's like, what have you been doing? Well, for the last 2 years, I've been taking these supplements that come from India.
Dude, it's like, all... Dude, this is truly... It just gets at the... I know that there is, it's not really Marxist or materialist to talk about greed, right?
Yeah.
But it really does get at the moral void, just like the moral vacuity of wealth and how it does not ever provide you. I mean, because like, it's like, as you said before, Tom, it's like in the long run, we're all dead. It gets us all. You can't escape it, no matter how much fucking money you have. But they cannot accept that. Very few of us can, actually.
Yeah, but they have, you're right, though, because it is greed in the sense where it's like this pathology where, like, it's like capitalism itself, right? I mean, it's like, it's unquenchable, right? It needs to accumulate and accumulate. Like, these people are like that, but just morally, like, and you know what I'm saying? As spiritually as a person, like, it just fills them with this, like, gaping void that, I mean, I guess they have to, like, figure out how to, like, I don't know, do crazy shit, like live to 120, you know, instead of enjoying the life that they have.
I don't think any of us can like envision an end to anything. I mean, like, you saw this with Twitter going down, earlier this week. It's like, I didn't, and I could be wrong still. Obviously, something could change next week.
Something could change in the next like 30 minutes. And then we get off this call, that shit is dead.
Exactly. But I just fundamentally don't think it's going away. And The reason I don't is because nothing ever ends anymore. Like, you've got sequels upon sequels of movie franchises. We cannot accept the end.
We're in a 30-year loop. We're in a 30-year loop, man.
Yeah, it's just everything has to keep going. It would probably be good for us if Twitter ended, not just because of like what it does, but just mentally, like, it would probably be good for us to have some closure on something in our lives.
Just for nothing else than just to practice for death.
Yeah, practice mindfulness for death. Prepare oneself. Steel yourself for the ultimate.
We need to start microdosing great loss. Or when the day comes, that way it doesn't catch us unawares, you know.
That's amazing.
The mistake I've made lately is macro dosing. That's where I fucked up.
You know what? You're right, dog. Because like a little bit gives you a little bit of perspective and a little bit of mindfulness about the end. Where instead of living in perpetuity, like fear, right, of what's to come, you're like, all right, I know a little bit of what this like, you know, or I could expect to see, you know what it's like, man.
Well, the thing about it all is this: I've learned this, and the scary thing about dying is just kind of not being part of tomorrow. You know what I mean? It's like kind of the idea of losing control and
like
all that
FOMO?
Sort of thing. Yeah. And another way, I think I've never been less afraid of death than I am now, simply because it's just like, again, we're all going to experience it, right? But like, nobody gets remembered exactly how you think you should be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even people that had these remarkable, extraordinary lives, you don't think about them all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever your great contribution is not really going to be remembered that much anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, how many
very few exceptions, but only if you can make money for somebody, as see the case of Mr. Tupac Shakur, Bob Marley, or
you're right. You know. But like, how many times have you thought about Abe Lincoln this week? Unless you're Walt Whitman, you're probably not thinking about Abe Lincoln a whole lot.
Yeah. But did you wait, Abe Lincoln? I mean,
every time I guess I pull out, what is it, a $5 bill? See, I can't even. What money is he on?
He's on the five, I think.
He's
right?
On five. Yeah, he's on fiver.
Walt Whitman was positively horny for Abe. He was positively worked up over Abe, man.
Yeah.
You wanted
Karl
Abe
Marx too, to some degree.
Yeah, but I don't know if Karl Marx wanted Abe to blow his back out like
Walt did.
Nah, I think he just wanted to have a nice chat, but Walt Whitman absolutely wanted to hit Abe's back wall.
Free his back walls.
Yeah, he wanted to absolutely destroy that brown eye.
Just as a side note, we have a friend that went to a high school called Walt Whitman High School, and Westboro Baptist Church protested it in the 2000s. Remember Westboro Baptist Church? They almost seem quaint now.
Yeah.
They protested it in the 2000s because Walt Whitman was gay.
Oh my fucking God.
What happened to those? Are they still out there? Like they probably seem normal compared to the QAnon people.
For the Q people, they got subsumed into the Q people.
Yeah. Anyways, back to our conference. Speakers included billionaire 44-year-old Christian Angermeyer, who said he needed to stay alive for another 50 years in order to benefit from future longevity treatments. This is the part that fucking kills me. Angermeyer said that the super rich eventually reach a point where having more money doesn't improve their lives very much. If you buy a yacht, you can always get a bigger yacht. If you buy a plane, you can always get a bigger plane. But the extent to which your life is changing with more money is actually very minimal. It makes more sense to direct funds to being healthier and living longer. They just go ahead and literally say it. It's just like, this is like cosmically, you know what I'm saying? Like spiritually, it's you get nothing in return. Yeah. I mean,
you know what, I'll tell you what it's like, man. It's like going out one night, man, and like buying a bag or some shit. And it doesn't matter how much you do until at some point, it's not going to work. At some point, you can't get any more high, you know?
At some point, you flatline, and now you got to find other ways to seek enjoyment, which usually means, you know, staring out the window at like 6 a.m. when the sun is coming up, the birds are chirping, hating your fucking life, you know? That's what these people do. You know?
Well, these guys are making a fundamental mistake, and that the magic in life is like the little moments, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. And like they're going for the big prize, you know, to live to be 106. Well, that doesn't guarantee you any sort of magic, you know?
Well, right. Tom, it's like you just said though, Tom, a minute ago, right? It's like, you know, we won't be remembered the way that we hope, but these guys think that because they have the power and the money, the resources, that they can control that post-mortem
narrative. Yeah.
And they can't and they can't control it. And that's what freaks them the fuck
that's
out.
That's what freaks them the fuck out.
Because nobody can control that shit, man.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. They talk about a startup called Hevolution. I don't know.
Yo, these names, man. They can hire me.
They talk about how the Saudis are pouring millions and billions into this. Which is
always a good sign.
Always a good sign with the slave traders.
This was the part I thought was pretty good. Yeah. A 67-year-old man took to the stage to tell us that since he'd been taking his own supplement, his biological age had reversed, and he was now biologically only 49 years old.
Okay.
That's what those guys were doing when they were cutting their hand and looking at their blood, because in their minds, there's like a biological age and then a true age. Like a platonic age, you could say.
Not even the way you feel, but the way that you're like, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what to call it.
Well, you know how like old men are like, 70s is the new 40 or whatever. It's like they've taken that and turned it into literally.
Into like a science.
And uberized it, yeah.
Oh, God.
May they live forever.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it talks about how they avoid the term anti-aging and opt instead for geroscience.
Why is it? I'm curious about that.
I maybe it's because they want it to be as inaccessible to people as possible. So
so they don't want to make it accessible?
Yeah. So it's like if it's geroscience, maybe we'll think it's Jerry Seinfeld science.
Yeah. Instead of so the poor as well be like, wait, I want to live forever.
Right. This guy says we want to be responsible and we want to come from science. But the day after his presentation, transhumanist Jose Luis Cordero told us he wanted to transcend biology, travel to Mars, and massively extend human lifespan.
Dog, you know what's so terrified about this shit, man? It's like, because, dude, like, I'm a fucking sci-fi nerd. I would love that shit, but it's like these people don't have this like idea of a collective future for humanity. You know what I'm saying? They're like literally, I don't know if y'all seen Elysium, where it's like this two-tier society where there's a space station where people can heal any illness they have, and everybody on Earth lives in like squalor and filth and shit.
Is that Tom Cruise?
Nah, that's Matt Damon.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
That's the guy that did the movie District 9. The guy that directed that did District 9.
I was about to say Uwe Boll. That's not Uwe Boll.
Yeah, Uwe Boll. No, he's a much different.
Wasn't that the guy that did the crazy cannibal movie?
I think so.
He did Postal too.
Yes.
Yeah. These guys are freaky, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I point all of this out is that it is like transhumanism. It is all geared. And like transhumanism's predecessor, eugenics, it's all geared towards trying to create the optimal human being. And that is another kind of fascist strain of thought. And at some point, there will be a convergence, and maybe that convergence is best realized in Peter Thiel. But that should give you pause that like billions of dollars, trillions of dollars of defense spending go into this shit. I mean, where do you think all this money's coming from? Most of it's coming from the fucking Pentagon, because the Pentagon wants AI. Yeah. They want fucking, the most state-of-the-art, like, missile guidance technologies. Mm-hmm. And
They want super soldiers, man. If they could have super soldiers, that's what they would want. You know, AI or super soldiers, they would be fine.
Maybe they know how to reanimate you after you get, you know, fucked up.
And put you back into the field.
Exactly.
Super soldiers. Back out there with you.
Yep, slap you on the butt. Go ahead, boy. You got it.
Right.
Yeah. Nah, man, but like, I don't know, like, not if it's a, you know, not the kind of, like, it's a through line between all of this. It's like, I mean, this is why, like, you know, like, any queer or anti-trans violence, it's like, it's literally, again, about, like, these people thinking about progeny, continuity, and, like, what the ideal person is, right? Or the ideal human being is, right? Especially to, like, succeed future generations, you know? It's terrifying, man.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrifying.
Well, you know, as Judith Butler pointed out in that essay, it's the dissolution of the family and of social norms. Like, that's a real thing in the sense that there are material constraints being put on people every day due to capitalism. And, you know, there are people who exploit that and try to spin some reactionary explanation out of it to, like, harness that to bring it back to life, or I don't know. I mean, it's not possible. And that was the thing with, you know, the original Nazis and World War II.
Who were futurists too? And
who,
like,
were futurists?
Yeah, they were futurists. Where futurism was associated with manhood and violence and speed and power. You know, and I think that I think that's definitely connected with Thiel and all these fucking, like, all these longevity people. You know, I don't know, man.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of the people that backed the Nazis were old blooded, like, aristocratic conservatives who wanted to bring back, like, that kind of more semi-feudal arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if that's what the Nazis themselves wanted.
I mean, maybe just give it a slick, sleek overcoat, like, of modernity, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know, this quasi-modernity that also harkens back to, like, I mean, I don't know, man. I think that's why, like, I don't know if I'm going off topic. That's why, like, the whole retrofuturism is a popular idea, because it's, like, you're kind of reupholstering the old, you know what I'm saying? You're right. Returning back to the old for the future, and I guess that's what these guys think, right?
Right.
Yeah. Upcycling the future.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that's that. You guys have anything you want to add before we sign off for this week? Happy days. We're recording this on November 22nd, the 59th anniversary of the day that JFK got blah, blah.
JFK got his spaghetti swirled.
Yeah.
the anniversary of JFK throwing up mom's spaghetti on the sweater.
Oh, Jackie?
Yeah.
He's trying to scoop it up, put it back in.
Yeah. Honestly, if you're looking for something to do with your family over Thanksgiving, watch Oliver Stone's JFK. Great movie.
I love that movie, man.
100% the CIA killed him. There's not a fucking doubt.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, I think they will. Of course, we're never going to find out about this because, like, of course, the state would never, like, you know, like, reveal these secrets. But I think, like, they're just like, hey, well, everybody either knows that it's the CIA and has just accepted it and we don't need to admit it, or they have their own reason for what happened, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like common knowledge. Everybody low-key knows, man. Or high-key.
Everybody knows.
It's just like, yeah. But our government killed the president, so what?
It's like when someone in your community has a secret, and it's like, come on, man. Everybody already knows. Just admit it in front of everybody. It's like, can we get the CIA to admit it?
Wasn't Biden slow to declassify a lot of that stuff because of the impact it might have on law enforcement and the intelligence agencies?
Yeah. It was supposed to come out like a couple. It was supposed to be unlocked like a couple years ago, and they said, now we got to wait like 5 more, 10 more years or some shit.
It almost makes me wonder if, like, the Havana Syndrome wasn't, that whole thing wasn't in some way
a, like, cover up,
to, like, valorize them or to, like, push the ball further down the road on that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, they could kick dirt over it and, like,
it's like, look at how targeted we are. Look at how dangerous our jobs are. You don't want to do something like this, Joe.
Yeah, that would make us more targeted even if people knew that we killed JFK.
If they knew that we fucking
if they knew for sure that we killed him.
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah. Man, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/Trillbilly Workers Party. Please pay $5 on that website and get episodes.
Let me say that again. Please pay $5 on that website. Let me put the right emphasis on the right syllables here. Please pay $5 on that website.
It's cheaper than a cup of coffee, man. You know, inflation and shit. You paying what, $6 for a cup of coffee?
I'm gonna be this winter. I'm gonna be standing out like the Salvation Army.
I'm ringing the bell.
Ringing the bell
with the Trillbillies park on.
Yeah, somebody try to put some change there. Said no, sir. It's $5.
Please pay $5 on the website. Do you hand them a slip of paper with the URL on it?
Yeah.
Nah, better yet, you got the card reader and shit.
Yes.
You just swipe your card right here, sir.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh shit.
All right. All right. Well, I will see you guys later. Not you.
See you, boys.
But
you guys.
I'll see you after we're done recording this. But the rest of you, I'll see you later.
Bye, y'all.
Adios.